Hello and welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 2. Today, I'm joined by Eric Taylor, Danny Ning, Kirk Pettis, and of course, myself, Matt Winterer. We've got a few topics in store today. We're going to be talking about the NSA. We're going to be talking about the caucuses. We're going to be talking about, what was that last topic, Eric?
Rand Paul versus Ron Paul, the political differences and strategies between the two of them.
Okay, well, you guys all went to the caucuses. I was a little under the weather myself, so why don't we kick off a little bit of the caucus conversation?
Yeah. So, how many people went? Actually, was there a lot of people?
At mine, there were 250. So that's SD 48. That's the southern part of Minnetonka and all of Eden Prairie. I did notice that Carver County had about the same. So there were, there were split up. For us, we met at Eden Prairie High School, and actually the DFL met there too in a different part of the building. We had Marty Seifert speak and Dave Thompson speak. There's pretty low attendance all around. I saw, really on Facebook, I saw quite a few mentions that this is the lowest headcount that they've had in almost 2 decades.
Yeah, it's pretty low for us too. So Marty Seifert didn't show up in my caucus, but Dave Thompson was there. Julianne Ortman was there. Jim Abler was there as well. Dave Osmick and Cindy Pugh as well. It just seems like, it wasn't a lot of people at all. So, I don't know. It doesn't really sound promising.
Who was who did the best, Danny, that you thought, for speaking?
Speaking? If you're going to have me judge speaking, I'm not going to lie, Julianne Ortman, she's definitely she's got that charisma. She's definitely got that speaking ability. But I didn't vote for her in this draw poll, though. So I voted for Jim Abler. So I feel like he's more of the type of guy that, I want as the state senate against Al Franken. So, but yeah, I would say Julianne's speech was good. Dave Thompson was pretty good as well.
How did Julianne do on the straw poll in your area?
Oh, she dominated.
Did she?
Yeah, she dominated. So I think in my precinct section, 3 people voted for Jim and 7 people voted for Julianne, and I forget what it was for the other people. But yeah, she pretty much dominated. I think it was overall there was 56 or something for Julianne, and everyone just – whatever. I don't know. How about you guys? How about you guys? What are the results for your precincts?
I moved to Chaska, and there was probably only 40 people for the entire caucus, and wow. In our ward, because I just moved, so I have no idea what to base it on. But our ward only had finished with 8 people. And Joe Hoppe is one of them, the house rep for the area. He lives in my ward, I found out. And Julianne had 2. Ortman and 2 people didn't even vote. They left it undecided, and I voted for Abler as well. And I found it very interesting when the pamphlets that the candidates all had out, Liberty was never mentioned in pretty much all of them. I didn't know much about Abler at the time, and he was the only one that had Liberty on it, on his sheet, just referenced once. And so that's why I said in our room that I was like, yeah, I'm voting for Abler because he's the only one that mentioned Liberty in any one of these sheets I held up. But it was, I found it very disappointing in a way, the caucus. People were not very informed at all about anything. To me, it was like, why are you even Republican? I mean, to even show up at a caucus means you want to do something, be there for some reason, And they what came out of their mouths was nothing conservative or liberty minded at all. It was all just, you know, Republicans need to take over and continue the growth of government is how I took it. It was kind of disappointing in a way, but
yeah, that's the same thing for my, basically the same thing for my caucus as well. So, you know, it's like we need Republicans need to get together and stand and fight together and, you know, and blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. How about you, Eric? How was yours?
So one thing I don't know, it was really somewhat the same from a liberty perspective. There wasn't, I didn't notice a ton of activists there. You know, the head count from, you know, obviously I caucus in Carver in 2012, but I was told the head count was substantially lower this time around. One thing that I noticed is that the presence, or actually the fact that Mike McFadden and Dave Thompson spoke, seemed to influence the straw poll vote count. You know, it was almost like, you know, when people had the opportunity to actually see these guys speak, they're like, yeah, I know that guy. I'm going to vote for him, rather than being, you know, too informed. I thought it was interesting how Mike McFadden actually won. It was 79-67 over Ortman. And there is I was talking with a guy as we were tallying the vote totals, and he's like, you know, one thing that Mike McFadden needs to change is make sure that people, you know, people aren't aware of the fact that he's somewhat pro gun control. He's like, other than that, I think he's going to do, you know, he's going to do just fine. And there were, you know, there were a group of us, and I was like, is there any way that somebody like that should actually get endorsed or win if they're a Republican? It's like, well, you know, other than that, he's really good. He's on message. And I'm like, I don't know how somebody can call themselves a conservative or a Republican and say, you know, a stance on something like that is good.
Well, that's what I want to talk about is after the last two major presidential caucuses, Liberty did very well. I mean, more the last time around, and they still didn't talk Liberty. They know that that's going to be a main factor in the endorsement process, and they still chose to ignore it. It's like they're afraid to even say it. And it's troubling because the next day on the radio, I just listened for a minute and they were talking about how, oh, well, do you think they're going to be able to, like, how are they going to get endorsed without, you know, any liberty message or whatnot? And no one, to me, that's a key integral part about getting to win the endorsement. And it's, they just don't seem to care at all about it. They just, you know, will run with the R and hopefully they get all the Republican votes out there. But
yeah, that's kind of, you know, within the Republican Party and within party politics in general, for a lot of people, unfortunately, the goal is to win rather than to stick to principle. And it's, I think, you know, for a lot of people who like to see that, you have those conversations and you're like, oh, I don't agree with you, but if that's your philosophy, then, you know, do what you will.
Do any of you have the total counts of statewide?
They only released percentages, not number. I have that, and I also have the straw poll counts for SD48 in Carver County. But I mean, I can pull up this,
not the statewide.
Yeah, I can. I'll pull up what they have off the website.
What website do you go to get this information?
Here we go. It's just off the Minnesota GOP site. So you can Google MNGOP and you can see it. So, The governor results were Marty Seifert, 29%, Dave Thompson, 26%, Jeff Johnson, 17%. That's who I voted for. Scott Honor, 9%, Kurt Zellers, 8%, and Rob Farnsworth, 1%. On the U.S. Senate side, Julianne Ortman at 31%, Mike McFadden, 22%, Jim Abler, 15%, Chris Dahlberg, 11%, and Harold Shudlick, who's kind of the protest liberty candidate, had 3%, and Monte Moreno, 2%.
Who the hell is Monty Marino?
I don't
know. And Harold Shutlick.
Well, you don't remember Harold?
No. Should I?
I could play a clip by
Eric. He is a strange cat, let me tell you that.
Do you have a clip, Eric?
Oh, but it's Harold? Long. If I can find something short, I'll play it.
Oh, yeah. No, I'd appreciate it if this is getting interesting.
Yeah, because only Julianne Ortman, Mike McFadden, Jim Abler, and Chris Dahlberg showed up in my straw poll. Well, maybe the other two did, but I just didn't really pay attention to them because I had no clue who they were.
Yeah.
That's not important or anything. You know, yeah, from what I've read, though, McFadden actually outraised Ortman by a large amount.
He's outraised every Republican candidate by a large amount. He's, you know, a Wall Street private equity guy, works at Lazard. He is really the establishment choice, along with Scott Honor on the gubernatorial side. He's also a Wall Street guy, and he's been having out-of-state fundraisers as $1.5 million on hand, far more than any other gubernatorial candidates.
It just kind of tells me that we don't really stand a chance against Al Franken. That's basically what it's telling me.
I don't know. I think Julianne has a chance against him. I think Abler would end up doing really good too, but I don't know if we'll ever get enough votes to have him win the endorsement. But
I could. Thing is, and I'm saying this and trying to be like as reasonable as I can be about this. If Franken goes away, we lose the watchdog and all the electronic privacy laws. He's the only one who's been calling these agencies to the carpet on what they're doing and their policies, and I do not support everything else he's about, but he's the only one who's doing that right now. Which,
how he does it is pretty weak. It doesn't. It just seems to be more of a show to just say, "Oh, we're trying to do something." The clips I've heard of him, I mean, I haven't followed everything he's said or done, but he's he's definitely going to be getting a lot of money through the tech industries too. So,
oh, yeah.
And that's kind of why he's got to do that right now too. I mean, he'll bring a lot of out of state money because of where that department that he chairs, the oversight committee. But
so I found a clip on Shudlick. I haven't listened to it before, but it's relatively short at a Tea Party meeting a month ago. So we can,
let's try it.
See what it sounds like here.
In closing, there'll be a lot of people like such as tonight coming before you and urging you and making their case. And any of the people before you here would do a lot more terrific job than what we have now. They would, together with you, pick up Uncle Sam and so Uncle Sam to start Mark change forward again.
Yeah, let's cut that off. I can't understand anything that's being talked about there.
No.
It's something about,
I think that's his problem. He's not a great communicator. He's 72 and rambles a little bit. But
pick up Uncle Sam, though.
What's that?
Pick up Uncle Sam.
Pick up Uncle Sam.
That's the only thing I could understand him saying there.
Yeah, you did better than
did, that. Any of you, was there a vote for delegates in any of your guys' rooms that you split off into, or if you want to be a delegate, were you just a delegate this time around? It's kind of that's how it was in my area. I mean, we had 27 delegate spots and alternate, 27 alternates, and there's only 8 of us in the room.
Yeah, I think we had 9 allocated and 7 delegates, 8 delegates.
We had 20, and 20 was the maximum for delegates, and we had I think it was 10 in the room. So yeah, everyone was delegates.
Yeah, it just shows how. They talked about it on the radio the other day, too. That's how Michelle Bachmann ended up getting endorsed her first time around. She flooded the caucus with all her supporters, and she was a shoo-in for her area then. And her campaign manager, I can't recall the guy's name, but now he's going to be running. And it sounded like he did the exact same thing. And it's obvious. I don't see why there's not more people. I mean, like, say, Julianne Ortman. This is her area. There's only 2 main supporters. I recognize them from helping her in her previous campaigns. And I had there was a guy in there that just said how much he disdained Julianne Ortman for her tactics and whatnot.
No way.
So it was pretty funny. I kind of just kept I held my tongue and just wanted to keep the show moving to get out of there as quick as possible. But it was pretty fun to hear some people chastising the candidates and why they support them. But overall, it was very disappointing, the Liberty mindset, just for how they want, they believe government needs to be stepping in and doing, fixing the problem when it's only exasperating the issues. And more government is not the answer. And people just, I don't know if they are just ignorant in the matter, or they just, people think that they're smart enough that they, have the answers. And especially if it's a Republican, they got to be smart enough to fix what's wrong, right?
Fair enough.
So,
should we move on topics here?
Well, I don't know. I did have, because we're kind of talking about including some clips, trying, playing around the clips. We didn't include anything in the last show. I do have a clip before we move on from the caucus topic, that was produced by Hannah Nicolet, who's actually running for, most likely it will be endorsed to run for the U.S. Senate seat, the Independence Party, Independence Party's candidate for the U.S. Senate seat. And she put together a decent video over what caucuses are about, what you go through, that type of thing. I think I mentioned earlier it's a little longer, so if we run through the clip and we want to shut it down, we can just do that again. We can listen to this a little bit and comment and continue forward. I'll play the clip here.
Hi, my name's Hannah. I am a Ron Paul supporter and I live in the state of Minnesota, and I would like to see him become the endorsed Republican candidate for president here from our state. And I'd like to tell you how to do that. We have a caucus system in the state of Minnesota. So some states have primaries where people just go and they vote, and the person who gets the most votes, that person becomes the endorsed candidate. Here in Minnesota, we apparently like meetings because we vote for people who go to another meeting, and those people vote for the nominee. So that's all caucuses are, is you're just picking. This is the dirty little secret, is that if you know how to vote, you can have a big impact at the caucus. And the caucus, here's the important thing. It is this Tuesday, February 7th, at 7 p.m. So this is the only day that is open to the public, and it is open to the public. That's another dirty little secret. It doesn't matter whether you are a Republican, Democrat, Independent, Anarchist, Socialist, Communist, whatever ism that you happen to ascribe to, or not at all, you are welcome to come. So please come this Tuesday, 7th at 7. Think Bruce Almighty, if you remember that, the 7th at 7. And registration begins at 6:30, but you actually need to be in your classroom with your precinct, those are your neighbors, at 7 o'clock. So how do I find where I'm going to go, right? You need to know where you're going to go. So what you do, Google the Minnesota GOP Precinct Finder. So Google the Precinct Finder, and then that'll take you to a page where you can just type in your address, and it'll pop up with a church or a city building or a school maybe where you will go, and that's where you're going to caucus on the night of the 7th. And so it will also tell you what your precinct is. So you'll go to that building, and those people, then when you get to registration, you'll enter the building, there'll be a registration table, and those people will tell you what room it is that you're going to meet with your precinct. But before you do that, you need to decide, if you've decided that you are going to caucus, you need to go to this website, minnesota4paul.com. Go to mn4paul.com, go there and tell them, I'm going to caucus for Ron Paul on Tuesday, so that they know who you are. That way, that they'll know who you are, and to support you if you're going to be a delegate, or so that you know what neighbors of yours that you need to support, because they're also Ron Paul supporters. So go to mn4paul.com and enter your name in, tell them that you're going to caucus, and that you're going to caucus for Ron Paul, and then you will know who they are. So here's how it's going to work. On the night of the caucus, there'll be a kind of an MC, but we call him a convener. You'll have in your room, you'll have someone who serves as the MC of the night. And that person at some point, here's the only important thing that is going to happen that night. A lot of other things are going to happen. There'll be like a straw poll, and they'll elect officers, and you know, some resolutions, some Robert's Rules type stuff. I make a motion. Do I get a second? Any discussion? Blah, blah, blah. Okay, we don't care about any of that stuff. The straw poll's not binding. What we do care about is this, that we're going to elect people who will go on to the convention and choose the nominee, and those people are called delegates and alternates. And so what the MC will do is they'll say that they're opening the floor for nominations for delegates, and then at that point you could say, yeah, I'd like to be a delegate, or you could nominate somebody else to be a delegate, maybe a Ron Paul supporter you know who's not there, and you know, hey, who knows, they could get it. Nominate other people that you, from your precinct, and or yourself or whoever, but they will, you know, write names down, and they will keep writing names down as long as the nominations keep coming in, and then they will close the nominations, and then you will take a vote, and you will vote for them, and depending on how many spots are allocated to your precinct, my precinct has 8 delegates that will come from my precinct, so that's how many spots we will fill for delegates, and then we'll also fill alternates, and alternates are people who will go to the convention and vote in the event that the delegate cannot make it. So delegates and alternates are just people who vote on your behalf. That's all it is. You're just electing representatives to vote for you. So there's pretty much all you need to know. In Minnesota, the caucus system is not a high level of participation, so it's an easy thing to have a lot of influence in. And Ron Paul really only needs about 2% of his supporters to show up in order to take the endorsement. So it's a really good bet. So if you have friends who are Ron Paul supporters, please give them a call. Have them watch this video. Tell them that they need to go and that there's something that they need to do on the 7th, because after the 7th, after Tuesday, it's no longer open to the public and they can't participate anymore. But yeah, do give them a call and let them know and tell them to come on board. So thank you for your time, and let's endorse the best president that we've ever had.
Okay, so that's the clip, and Hannah is actually going to she probably will win the Independence Party endorsement to run for U.S. Senate. She looks pretty. I think she'll appeal to a lot of Liberty people. That's a good overview of the caucus process as well.
Did you say she's a candidate for the U.S. Senate?
Yeah, she's the only declared candidate that's seeking the Independence Party endorsement. I think they have their endorsing convention sometime in May.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. Did at your guys' caucus, did they say that if you do not coincide with the Republican platform, that you shouldn't be there?
I think that's generally understood.
It goes against what she said in the beginning of her little speech, that recording we just listened to.
Right.
They're trying to crack down. And then the other thing that they're threatening to pass, that if you're registered in any party, then you can't be a delegate or something like that. Do you remember who was passed trying to get that through? They were saying that they're going to try and get it through to be voted on at the BPOU.
What's that specifically?
Where if you were a member of any other party, you can't be endorsed or be a delegate or something like that.
Yeah. I thought that's already passed.
Within like 2 or 4 years after.
Yeah, no, that hasn't passed. And I think that was something that Keith Downey, who's the the Minnesota GOP chair, suggested last month that could be there as a possible resolution, but that he or the party isn't pushing it. But you could see, you know, that is something that would be worked into the party platform. So I don't know. I didn't hear, at least in my Senate district, I didn't hear that resolution presented. I don't know. Did you guys notice that? Or is that a resolution? Or
it wasn't brought up in any of ours or in mine at all.
Yeah.
We didn't even pass a resolution to continue on to the BPOU. Yeah. A few people brought up a few things, and it's like, yeah, that's already in the platform.
Yeah, I think there is the big resolution that I heard about in our area was making sure that the Second Amendment was explicitly protected in the state constitution, which I guess it isn't. So there were some anti-gun control resolutions that were submitted at the precinct level that will reach the resolutions committee and be voted on at the Senate District Convention.
Yeah, that was pretty much the same thing. Raleigh was the chair for my precinct, so he brought a few resolutions. We all pretty much passed it because it was kind of getting late. And some of us, probably all of us, were just kind of half-assed listening to it. But, you know, he brought up the gun issue as well as the abolishment of the Met Council and a few others. So, yeah, that was our precinct. What we did discuss, well, if you're a member of any other party besides the Republican, we shouldn't be here. So
yeah.
He did specifically say that. So that was kind of interesting how that was not brought up with your guys' caucuses, but that was pretty, pretty well known for ours.
Well, the conveners were in our caucuses were all instructed to state that. And furthermore, if you identified anybody that you suspected or knew weren't party members, they were there to be told to leave. So I think that's pretty standard. But generally, I don't know, you know, that just doesn't happen too often.
No, unless if like Obama's in the room, then yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think for the most part, a lot of us, we kind of already knew. Like, Brent Corvisil was in my caucus, so we kind of, and Denny Laufenberger was there as well. So we kind of knew a lot of us that, you know, we're in the Republicans, so that wasn't really an issue.
Well, to me, it doesn't matter what party you're with. If you want to go vote on a Republican candidate at the straw poll caucus, we've seen how it all works. To go from one level to the next, you need the numbers. And so if, say, there's some moles put in there from the Democrat Party, they're not going to make much of a ruckus anyways. It's not like they could have the numbers that would come and take over the entire thing in the BPOU and put up the weakest candidate they could think of. You know what I mean? To go from this level to the next level to the state is a process that pretty much weeds out people.
Yeah.
So they kind of threaten that, oh yeah, anyone can be there. But big deal. It's not a big deal. You need the numbers.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, the caucuses are on the same night. So you skip your own to be able to go to the other one and try to sabotage it. I don't think that's as effective, you know.
Yeah, well, and I think they're afraid of libertarians coming into the party because that's who we are. And since we are a two main party system, you know, that's where a lot of us fall in the lines of more libertarian. But you know, there's one of the two parties to go for, and it's always going to be the Republican Party as of right now. So, to advance the goals of liberty, you know. So,
yeah.
So, I think it's probably a good segue. Let's move to a new topic here. What would you guys like to move to first?
I think, Eric, you want to talk about the differences between Rand and Ron Paul?
Yeah, so we can do that. Because that's directly related to what Kirk was mentioning. There is a philosophical difference between the two as far as how to influence politics and influence party politics. I'll play that clip. It's about, how long is it? A little under 2 minutes. I'll play it here.
My first choice had always been my father. I campaigned for him when I was 11 years old. He's still my first pick. But, you know, now that the nominating process is over, tonight I'm happy to announce that I'm going to be supporting Governor Romney.
His endorsement for presidential candidate Mitt Romney. What was a blow for Ron Paul supporters who are still rallying for Ron Paul until the very end of the game. So what does this endorsement mean? And should we expect Ron Paul's endorsement for Mitt next? To join me now to discuss more is Lou Rockwell, chairman with the Ludwig von Mises Institute. So Lou, what's your opinion on this shocking endorsement, to say the least, and on Fox News to boot?
Well, it's too bad it was on Hannity, who, of course, after all, is an enemy of Ron Paul. But I think it's not a surprising announcement at all. Rand has always made it clear that he's not a libertarian. He's a Republican conservative. I think it was always very much in the cards that he would endorse the nominee. In fact, he's been saying that for some time. So I don't think that's a surprise, but I think it's a sideshow. I think what we have to think about is, first of all, congratulating Ron Paul on all he's done, on the millions of kids he's brought into the liberty movement, not only in this country, but in foreign countries, who he's educated about Austrian economics and issues of war and peace and the police state and so forth. And that all goes on, and I would say intensifies once the political stuff is out of the way, because I must say I think you can't actually change the regime from the inside anymore. You can change the mafia from the inside. So it has to be done from the outside. Now Ron Paul is going to be working, as he always has his whole life, from the outside in an educational way, not in a political way. And I think we're going to see many more victories from Ron and from the Paul movement. It's just not going to be part of the political baloney that goes on in Washington.
So, yeah, that's a clip. I think kind of goes over the differences between the two, where Rand Paul's looking to change from within, and Ron Paul's more focused on education, and people, you know, who are interested in that sphere of politics seem to fall on one side or another as far as what strategy they think works best.
Did Ron Paul ever endorse Romney?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think he did. Yeah, I couldn't see Ron ever doing that. And so that is a one main difference between Rand and Ron. But
no, that's kind of interesting. You raise the point that Rand is trying to change the party within, and Ron is trying to change from the outside. I guess in your opinion, what is the best way to do this? Do you think it's better to change within, or is it better to change from the outside? Or in my mind, I think we need a collaboration of both, Rand Paul kind of doing it on the inside job and Ron Paul doing the outside. I don't know. What do you think, Eric?
My thought is that because of the fact that Ron Paul is so ideologically pure, it really, that sense of honesty really appeals to, probably 10% of the population who are, hardcore believers in the Constitution, who are libertarian, really believe in personal rights, honest money, strong civil liberties, a sensible foreign policy, who have an understanding of kind of the consequences throughout history of being very aggressive on the foreign policy aspect. It generally leads to problems for empire. So that's helpful. But on the party politics side, to me, it seems like you have about a 20-year turnover in general ideology within a party, and it's a painful process when that takes place. The last time that really took place was in the late 80s, when you went, from a more libertarian Ronald Reagan type of party ideology to a Pat Robertson social conservative ideology, which is still in place. But you see the libertarian strain growing. And to me, it's a long process, but eventually the chances of the party going back to a small government, fiscally conservative, strong constitutional platform and sticking to it will happen either out of, activism or necessity. And I think Rand Paul sees that, and he's, trying to, he's libertarian, but he's trying to bring together a couple of factions within the party that traditionally just on some issues don't see eye to eye, and that's social conservatives and libertarians. So I guess the answer to your question is, both strategies are beneficial. That's the way that I see it. But some people get really frustrated with the party politics side because, let's face it, politics is somewhat of a blood sport, and it doesn't move fast, and it can be, can be frustrating. So that's kind of my view of the difference between the two of them. And, I really think they're both doing what they can to achieve the same goal.
Yeah, this is kind of what we're seeing, last cycle, we have all these people just being so involved, and then, now Ron Paul's no longer really in the election cycle, and, based on the results of our, caucus, there's a huge dip on the interest. So I agree, nothing happens overnight, but that's the frustration that we're seeing is, these people just we're not seeing results right away. Well, we're going to just ditch this completely. And, how do we kind of get these people to continue the fight? That's like a million-dollar question. You know, we're just not seeing that, so I don't know.
Well, my viewpoint of governance is all the political leaders are there short-term. The bureaucracies are there to stay. And I think, too, to get to that next level of presidency, you need to be an individual that accepts what the bureaucracy has put in front of you. You can't just go in there and try and change everything to your ideals, especially how Obama was first elected. They, you know, thought he'd come in there and change everything, and nothing was further from the truth. It's kind of the continuation of everything the same and extending bigger, larger and larger government. But so I really don't feel it'll be really interesting with Rand running in two more years, and how I really don't feel that they'll treat him any different than they did his father. And it'll be pretty interesting, the tricks they try and pull and whatnot. So it'll be fun. It'll be quite the interesting caucus 2 years from now.
He's already fundraising pretty well. So he should have the funds in place, you know, and the organization in place. But yeah, I think I agree with you, and it's somewhat evident in the fact that they're even pulling up when they're going to conduct the 2016 Republican National Convention. It's in early June rather than mid-August. So looking to condense and, you know, solidify support by the, you know, behind the endorsed candidate. So it makes it even more difficult for, you know, someone who may or may not be the choice of the power brokers that be within the party to do well.
That would be nice. I think the groundwork's definitely been laid. If everyone that supported Ron would support Rand, it'd be it's only going to grow for the next few years as well. So it'll be interesting. But I think Republicans are shooting themselves in the foot as they go along, just because they can't allow someone like Rand to get there anyway. So they'll be willing to take a step back and get the distrust and disfavor of the American people just to not allow someone like Rand ever to get the presidency. But because could you imagine someone like Rand Paul being president and allowing his father to not sign the contracts to be able to see confidential information?
What do you mean?
To where you can actually talk about it. All politicians that see this confidential information, they can't talk about it. And it's just hilarious to see them on TV, that a specific person that's involved in these, that knows the right data, but they can't disclose any of the information. And so when there's certain topics at hand, they just have to BS their way around it. And it's just pure propaganda, always being funneled down our Americans' throats through the media. And they're very compliant because they don't counter with new questions or anything. So I don't know, I'm just ranting, but
I didn't know there was. I suppose, are you talking about how, you know, some information is classified and they can't talk about it? Is that what you mean?
Let's say there's some classified information that's ever leaked.
Yeah.
Even if it's leaked and the public knows about it, anyone that is in government that signs these contracts that they cannot disclose confidential information cannot even disclose leaked confidential information. They still have to deny it's ever existed or the existence of it, even if it's leaked. And the public knows. So then they pull in these officials that have signed these things and to say, oh, this was an expert in this area. What do you say? And they have to deny it anyways then, or just spin it in the way that they can to cover it up. And it's, we can never get true honesty in any of the reporting these days with all the
With all the license, I mean, these people will be put in jail or shot if you disclose this information, and it's a lifelong term. It's a lifelong contract, so.
So you're suggesting that, you know, if I can't really.
Well, I'm just saying that someone like a Rand Paul that could actually get people involved without, you know, when you're president, I would think you could, you know, get people access to information that doesn't have to sign these agreements to change the direction of our country. And that's what we're shooting for. And that's where it has to be, from someone from the outside that doesn't have the information, but that can freely openly talk about it, that of information that has been leaked and whatnot. That's all confidential information. And because they list everything as confidential now. I mean, the majority of the stuff that's, everything's, you know, in the security of our nation made confidential now, no matter how petty the information is. But, I don't know, it's a catch-22 for the American public when our politicians need to have this information. And that's why everything goes to these closed-door sessions after, you know, they do a public hearing, which is all pretty much propaganda and spinning. And then they go into the closed door hearing, and that's when the real information is discussed. And it's totally blind from the American public, which was completely unconstitutional. Our founding fathers wanted us to be open. Our government should not be able to do anything that the citizens cannot do. And we've gone very far from that through the growth of big government and the bureaucracies. And specifically because of that growth and our intervention throughout the world, it makes everything classified, so we can't even talk about it.
I think it's worth saying that our influence over the rest of the world's already something that's cause for concern. You know, we've been spreading our tendrils out a little too far. Can't afford to keep at this rate.
Well, the joke is we're not even going out and spreading freedom and liberty in the world. Right. We can't even do it at home, and that's what we claim that we're doing throughout the world. But all we're doing is setting up tyrants and dictators and controlled economies throughout the world to benefit ourselves, and while keeping other people pinned down by their government in the absence of liberty. If we became a true liberty country, the pressure that would put on the rulers of other countries, everyone would want to live here, and just like they did hundreds of years ago. And that's what put the pressure on other countries to give their citizens more and more liberty, to where they do the facade of public elections. And now we have grown government so large in the last 50-100 years in this country that we seriously, our public doesn't care of the influence that we peddle throughout the world to control countries' economies, that to benefit our own, that, and we could care less about how their citizens are treated.
Yeah, I think that's
fair enough. I mean, it's fair enough to say.
Yeah, and it's
that's just my opinion. That's how I see government working today, and yeah, so.
Yeah,
well, that's actually an interesting segue to get into our third topic.
No? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, you can? Okay.
You.
I just wanted to speak to Kirk's point. That really is, you know, you can. I've read and watched interviews by people in, you know, foreign countries, you know, like Afghanistan or Iraq, or, you know, places where the U.S. government's been way too active in. And, you know, the refrain is, we like the American people. We, you know, a lot of them, I think, would prefer to live in the United States than where they live. But they just don't like the U.S. government. In the policies, and really, you know, to me it looks like the military
and intelligence agencies really care more about economic activity and prosperity of the United States than they do a lot, you know, a lot of these countries in Africa or Asia or the Middle East, and they'll put in power who, you know, put leaders into power in those areas who most benefit the United States. And if they don't benefit the United States, they'll remove them and put somebody else in power. And, you know, a lot of these people who get put into place aren't, you know, the most savory characters.
And, Saddam Hussein.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, if, you know, I think the Liberty message, if you just stay out, you know, there are politics that you just don't understand from a U.S. perspective that takes place in these countries. And, you know, it causes a lot of issues. So yeah, it would be nice to, you know, have somebody, you know, at the top that could address that. But like Kirk was saying, there's really, I mean, I don't know what you guys think, but really, what can you expect from, you know, 400 odd congressmen, 100 senators, and a president over a huge bureaucracy that's in place and really does what it's going to do, regardless of what politicians, you know, are the leaders? Because it's just this huge, you know, operation that I'm somewhat skeptical is really heavily influenced by any politician or group of politicians.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're doomed. That's all I have to say.
I hope not.
Well, it's not just doomed. It's just the mindset of we need government intervention in our day-to-day lives. And I think that is fading and growing at the same time. There's no better rift to see that in is in the Republican Party and through the caucus systems the last two times now, and just people's opinions and just talking with people on the street, I guess. It's everyone says, oh, yeah, I don't see how we can ever make government smaller, but we need to, or, you know, we shouldn't be doing this. I want my tax money back. I want this, but, oh yeah, but the government needs to do something about this. And, you know, it's always just broadcasted to us that government intervention is best. And us peons in the world just need to step aside, let the power brokers deal with it as they may.
Well, you might be a peon, but... Well, at this point, I think it'd be worth it to bring up the NSA spying, the NSA in general. We've been kind of off and on talking about this topic amongst the Liberty Movement for, well, before Snowden came around, we all have a pretty good understanding of the outreach and the actual long arm that the NSA has at this point, whether through their prison program or whatever other programs that they have had, where that, you know, they're capturing carte blanche huge amounts of data about everybody, not just people who they have suspicions about. It's interesting from a perspective of somebody like I've been watching it using the Liberty, you know, kind of mindset that I've got for a long time, been upset about it since the very beginning of understanding that they were spying on Americans. And then over time, the revelations that have been coming out, I'm almost to the point now where I'm not even shocked anymore when I hear about the latest thing that's been revealed. Like there was a revelation that between NSA and the Canadian NSA, I can't remember what they're called, but they had the ability to track where somebody was who tapped into an airport Wi-Fi hotspot for a week beforehand and a week afterward. It didn't matter where they went. They could track them in either direction because of the amount of data that they kept. You could tell for weeks around when somebody had stopped by. And it was just by the one time that they connected to that airport Wi-Fi, because your system has your laptops and whatever devices have an address on them called the MAC address, which is generally completely unique. I say generally because you can manipulate what that number is whenever you want to, but most people don't. A MAC address is being tracked, you know, to an extent where, you know, it's a ridiculous amount of tracking that they can do for somebody who's not even a suspect of any kind of a crime or anything. You know, and it's the big data, the metadata that they can collect about people to the point where you can draw huge conclusions about people just based on a few searches on them through their systems. And you know, to me personally, I think that's it's an atrocity. It needs to be stopped immediately. There's due process is being completely ignored. The Fifth Amendment's, you know, obliterated at this point. Because you don't even know that you're being tracked at this point, but you are, and you can be held liable when you're doing something that you don't even know that's going to correlate you into or implicate you in some kind of a crime of some kind. And I don't know that there have been a lot of politicians who said, yes, this is a benefit. We're getting a benefit out of this. We're stopping terrorism. But I haven't seen a specific example that they can come up with that shows, yes, we foiled this plot using this technology. Now, I'm sure that they do exist. I'm sure they have caught a few things. But as we all know, these programs have been in place since before 2001, and we know what happened in 2001, the biggest attack that we've seen on the United States. And that, to me, I'm not trying to be callous and cold, but I don't see the death of those 3,000 people as outweighing everybody else's right to privacy. I think it's a completely overzealous reach that needs to be stopped.
Well, it's hilarious on how the fear is propagated amongst us. How about this last Super Bowl? Just last a week ago on Sunday, all the fear tactics they were doing when they had that 9/11 truther run into the interview at the end. And then what I heard is that they started just letting people in because the lines were so backed up of searching everyone that they just gave up it eventually and just let everyone in. It's all just for show, to put fear in our minds. This whole Olympic stuff is, you know, oh, there's terrorists out there. We need to know everything. We need to have so much security and trample on over everyone's liberties. And
with the Olympics, it's all Russians, so I don't think they have anything to worry about. I don't think there are any foreigners.
Yeah, I think there is, from a corporate and political aspect, there is a lot of, for the interested parties, there are a lot of benefits that are gained from the nature of digital monitoring. Really, the NSA, they develop a digital fingerprint based on, you know, what a person purchases using credit cards, who they call, where, you know, what they do online. After, you know, a short time, the intelligence agencies can tell where a person is at based on their digital fingerprint at any given time. So they, you know, they really, and it hasn't really just been since 9/11. This type of technology has, you know, been around at least for data collection, if you want to talk about the internet, for probably 25 years or so. And they've been recording phone calls for, you know, since they could.
There wasn't the NSA, but various intelligence agencies. And really, you know, the usefulness of that is vast. I mean, you really archive all information. So all information domestically and foreign. So you have all communications, you understand, or they have collections of, you know, from a corporate economic perspective, you know, all scientific information, finance information, you know, understand, you know, what's going on from a political perspective in any given country, what any given individual does. So from a U.S. perspective, it's probably the strongest tool that has been developed politically for a country. And it's, you know, it's unfortunate from a privacy perspective, but, you know, and I think it's going to make it extremely difficult to really abolish, but it's so advantageous from a economic and political perspective for the government.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes,
it makes the government that much more efficient.
Yep.
And I'm very against efficiency in government.
And the U.S. that much more dominant, really.
Well, they can, yeah, the information you can glean from everyone for, yeah, like Matt said, just a week on either end of, you know, someone's gaining access to someone, you can pretty much know where they're going to be on a given day. And then the information that people search, what they do, their phone calls, any information, you can figure out anything about anyone in a very short period of time. And especially just by if, I don't know how they're categorizing all the data. That's kind of the key thing. I think they have all this data, but they still don't even know how to categorize it to make it easily searchable and to get the information that they really need.
But they're working.
And I think they're behind on that.
They have the best mathematicians, scientists, you know, really in the crypto scientists. I mean, they have an unlimited amount, really a lot of money to employ smart people to achieve those goals.
Yeah, well, look at Obamacare.
Yeah, exactly. But I would argue that the NSA is probably far more efficient than, you know, some system put together by a politician and try to get up and running within a month of, you know, the production date.
It's just that if anyone steps out of line, they can go review their information. They can figure out how to undermine that individual, politician, anyone, yeah, at any given time. And as long as you're a part of the club, you're good to go.
And you have to really think that that happens at a high political level from time to time, where they have available information on someone they don't necessarily, that isn't toeing the line, and, you know, information is released, and that's it.
Well, that's what I heard about when Clinton and Obama were primarying, you know, for to win the endorsement of the Democrats. Like, I guess Obama's people were, both Hillary and Obama were very, you know, the people running the campaigns were very crude and like, yeah, you know, it's, you don't go along with us, you know, you're going to be losing your job, this and that. They threaten people all the time. And I think that's just what's going to continue to grow. It's either you step in line and go with the system, or you don't, and you're out. And it's much better to be a part of the party. And that's just not the kind of government that was founded in America, and that people really, if they gave it an honest thought, they don't want to live under. And we're going so far from liberty and freedom that this is the perfect controlling mechanism to stomp that out at any level.
Well, it's all fueled by money. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Well, it's fueled by power. I don't know if this is money. I don't think.
Well, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Exact same thing. I mean, you use money to accomplish goals, and that's. So.
That's power.
Money is power.
I think when you have the power, the money just flows naturally. you can utilize it, but to a certain level that the power, I guess I don't know how to put it, but.
Well, so here's, essentially you've got a self-preservation thing going on. You've got the people who are in power wanting to preserve their power. You can, of course, get money flowing naturally in that position. You can buy your way into power. You could buy an election. It's easy to buy an election. You out-advertise your competitor and exploit their weaknesses, and it's what happens all the time. It's why getting out-funded, it results in you losing an election. And we can see time and time again that you look at the people who are in power, the truly in power, power people. They out-fundraise everybody else. And why is that? Well, that's because they're the people who have that kind of...
Well, it's easier to throw money at people that you know are going to win.
I think the opposite is the cause and the effect, though. The opposite reason is why that happens. You know, the people who are power-broking are attracting or already have large amounts of money, not the other way around. But, you know, as far as the NSA goes, I don't know that they're necessarily sharing that information for political gain. I haven't seen evidence of that before, though. But
they wouldn't tell an NSA employee to go do it. They'd give it to some other agency and give them that information to do it. So it's not, once it changes a handful of hands, it can't be brought back to the NSA.
Yeah, and the NSA is...
So they can deny, oh, yeah, we're not doing any of that. We're not doing any of that, but other agencies are.
Oh, they might be. Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
And they can just funnel the information or leak it somehow, you know.
Yeah, that NSA is really it's a repository of information. It's, for the most part, politically or, you know, from an intelligence perspective, it's agnostic. It doesn't care. Just cares about accessing and archiving information, and other agencies extract that information from the NSA. So it could be, you know, the FBI, the CIA, I don't know that any of us know if or how a politician would have access to that, maybe, you know, through a conduit at one of those agencies. But there, you know, there are certainly networks in place within Washington, D.C. that, you know, I would think if somebody who's politically powerful enough would have contacts with intelligence organizations that could, you know, provide that information if they really wanted it, right?
Possibly. I was going to say... Well, I've heard from people when they go to phone stores, they see police officers come in and ask for, give them a number and get the information from them. Data calls and whatnot, numbers called, contacted, so they can go back and utilize that data if possible. And so it's even... All that information is stored in a private business, and yet, you know, they give
you mean,
that
you mean like at a
willingly.
Verizon store, they walk in and they're getting this information?
Yes.
What? Yeah, I've never heard that before. That's new.
I have had people tell me about it that have witnessed it, so.
And is it like store policy? They just give out that kind of information? That's bizarre.
I don't know. I assume they must have had a warrant or something for it, but. You don't know. They come in with a number and they come out with a packet.
Fair enough.
So what do you guys think should be, you know, done, if anything, with the NSA? You know, they're only going to continue developing new methods, new technologies to procure and analyze information. I mean, are there... There's some legal restraints that should be put into place, or should they just not be allowed to do it? And even if they were mandated not to do it, would that even matter?
I think enforcing the Constitution would be what's required in this.
But how do you do that?
Well, just apply the common sense rules that have been set up in the Constitution and say you can't harvest information about people if you don't have a warrant for it. It's very large at this point, like you mentioned. The program is huge, and it should never have gotten to this point. But that doesn't mean that we can't get back to where individual liberty and freedom are the ruling factors. You know, we're at a place right now that's not the case at all.
I think part of the reason is because they don't really care about the Constitution. That plain and simple, you know. So.
Well, it makes government inefficient. There's no doubt about it. It limits the power of government, and it bugs them to no end. It would bug me if I was in that position where I couldn't get things done that I wanted to, because, you know, you feel like you have the answer or whatnot and you need to implement this, but no, you got to go through the channels of other politicians, the politics of the land,
slow.
Who elects who, and it's a slow process, and it's meant to be slow. And it's meant for a limited government, and that's where we've been eroded so far against that we don't, I don't think we resemble anything what our Constitution once was. And they do what they want. You go and try and claim your rights to any cops or anything or any officials and see how far that gets you.
Fair enough.
So Matt, you make a good point. I mean, you know, from an NSA perspective, one solution that makes sense is that, you know, if you're going to collect information on an individual, you should have a warrant. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have rights to, as a government entity, doesn't mean that you have rights to have a global dragnet in place. And I think there are countries that are starting to become a little upset by that. A couple are Brazil and Germany, where they're like, we're going to develop our own networks and just cut off communication. But, you know, if they do that, the CIA or, you know, probably NSA, CIA will find a way to gather information on autonomous networks and it won't even matter. So it's a government restraint that, you know, it's the only possible way that I could think would take care of it. And then even if you have that, I don't know, what's to prevent, you know, that agency from finding legal loopholes or, you know, to continue operating as they have in the past.
Right.
Well, the technology is there. Why not utilize it?
That's what.
How about
say.
Just arguing back to liberty that you can't get punished unless you cause harm to anyone else? This micromanaging and social engineering and making just completely laws that make no sense that are you're not harming anyone or anything. That
yeah, but no,
there's so many laws in the books that everyone's guilty at all times of anything. If you really wanted to look deep enough into anyone, so if liberty was complete in America and government stored all the information and used that to prosecute people that actually do harm after the fact, I think that is what government should be. I mean, we live in a new era of technology that can prove wrongdoings far better than any other court system did in the past of just word against word or witness against witness. If there is no witnesses, you know, if there was actually true liberty, then keeping all this information wouldn't be harmful to any citizens anyways.
That's not true, because we were just talking about politicians taking advantage of the information and it getting disseminated out. So I disagree. I think it needs to be stopped without discretion. It just needs to stop.
That's my point, though. It's always been there. I mean, look at how Obama got elected the first time. All that information got outed about the divorce that the person he was running against, all that information got leaked out, and Obama won a landslide. I mean, this has been going on for years and years, and I mean, and decades and decades. But the information is always there. But if really, if government's role is completely limited and just utilized for the proper purpose of enforcing the law, and the laws are actually just laws that aren't stepping on people's liberties, and if you're not harming anyone else, you should be able to do what you want, then I see no problem in keeping the information and to utilize it. I mean, we are, it would just be a vital, minimal role of government instead of, I'd much rather have that than a vast military organization going around the world and propping up other countries that are in our favor and overthrowing countries that are not locking step with us.
The problem with allowing the, and it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, but allowing the U.S. government, NSA, whatever other agencies are archiving data and arguing that they should be able to do it, is that other countries are becoming, well, they're aware of what's going on, and there's some pushback. You know, they're saying, you know, you don't have the divine right to access all of our information and to utilize that for political and economic gain. Sort of, I don't know, just be, you know,
what kind of political gain would you have if government is worthless in our country, or it's totally just there to enforce law, which our government was supposed to do in the first place? I don't see why anyone would be fighting for that power. Criminals wouldn't be fighting for it because there's nothing to gain from it. That's just my utopia, I guess, something that would be strictly to what our Constitution was, you know, founded on. We had to battle people that wanted a larger, more powerful government in the birth of our country, and it's been a battle ever since. And luckily we had learned men and that were able to see through the facade of the powerful government that, you know, which anyone in government wanted. And that's why government only met for a few months out of the year back then. It was very, very minimal. And that's what the intention was, to not run over the economies of people's day-to-day lives and the businesses that promote a healthier lifestyle and culture in our own country. But that's why I just, if we truly had a limited government, that information really couldn't be used to micromanage, because the laws wouldn't be there to enforce. I mean, it'd be, yeah, great if that information is used to out people that are going around harming people that are full of shit. I mean, everyone says, oh, if we had free markets, businesses would run rampant over everyone, you know. Faulty quality, faulty this and that, but that goes against the free market principles completely, because they'd be out of business right away. And with the free information, not controlled information, people would, especially with the internet today and the availability of information, the more efficient a business and the more good that they produce by the way they produce their products and the good that they do for their local areas, the jobs they support, it'd be that's where people would want to put their money into those certain products and have that much more freedom and competition out there. It would weed the bad out, and you'd be forced to actually live a more moral, just world, because that information's out there that would out you of the devious nature that you would supposedly be in with a free economy.
So do you think that it would be right to sit there and analyze that information and try to root people out before it happened?
I think there's good and there's bad, and people swing all the time either direction, mostly good, but it's the more information available, the more you're able to out the bad without having specific mandated laws that prohibit such thing. I think people can just justify their actions and want to support people that do good.
So
the more information out there, the more readily at hand you can be to make wiser decisions. And I think that would, I mean, it's, let's say the government stored everything. I mean, you still can't access that information. I mean, you can't just, I mean, that would be that would be falling on, you know, privacy laws, obviously, through what our Constitution is. But for the rule of law, I could see that the government would be better at that to actually have the information, and you can call forth that information in a court setting to prove people's innocence or guilt.
So what you're saying is before there's crime, there's pre-crime?
There's pre-crime? No. I think the rules and regulations of today enable crime, enable shady maneuvering and whatnot, and it blocks the true information out there and the power and the money that can be dumped into the power system that can block certain information that goes out there that would be negative to certain businesses, individuals, or whatnot because of the system of that we have built through the mass regulations and bullshit laws that are enacted.
So you're essentially fine with the way the NSA has been functioning this whole time?
No, not at all.
Well, but you're
not at all.
You're essentially saying that you think it should be used for that. I mean, no, like
if it was in tandem with
that's what they do right now.
That is limited in their doings and their. We are not a republic. We are not a democracy. It's to me we are living in completely a fascist country right now.
But what you're suggesting.
And that kind of information only feeds and grows a fascist economy, a fascist government. And if we actually lived let's go back 200 years, say this information was really available at the birth of our country. I don't think we would be this far gone towards tyranny if that information was utilized all the way back then. And government would have been held in check more and more. And people that should have been prosecuted would have been prosecuted more readily, and people that were innocent wouldn't have been find fault when they were actually innocent.
Yeah, the question with that is, what individual or group of individuals are the people who decide people should be tried or, you know, tried or executed or, you know, for whatever they've done? You know, would people 200 years ago always use the information for the public good, or would they used it in, you know, some circumstances for personal gain?
Yeah, and with free information at hand, you could actually go and prove the people that they did it to gain their own power. And you could out them that way. And this is why you can't allow this person to be in power, because, you know, they're utilizing information for their own power benefit.
Yeah, because eventually, I don't know, it seems like it's going to be really difficult to develop any mechanism to prevent this type of monitoring.
Well, exactly. I think it's here to stay.
Yeah,
because about it.
They encrypt.
There's no way a government's going to say, "Let's not do this."
Yeah, most encryption technologies are developed by the government. Most ciphers are developed by the NSA. They have the keys to almost every technology that can be used to ensure privacy. So that's, I don't know, that's an interesting point that you make, Kirk, that, you know, are the next steps not really, I have no opinion on this whatsoever. Are the next steps not really being overly concerned about the fact that information is available, but being concerned
with how that information is accessed and how the privilege to access information is doled out.
Here's my question. I guess if you have nothing to hide, maybe I'm just playing devil's advocate, but if there's nothing to hide, should you care? What you know?
Absolutely, because you don't know where or how that information is going to get used in the future.
Yeah,
I definitely think that you should care.
But
my argument is, that's why I keep saying that we wouldn't need to care if we actually had a responsible, limited government that only enforced the laws that haven't been built up like they are today in a more controlling. I really believe everything that is done is very controlled, and this information is only going to be utilizing more and more control. And without, and that's why I was so disappointed at the caucus system, is that the lack of liberty in people's mindsets or anything, they don't care. It's, you know, government needs to do something. We need to have a powerful government that can do this and that throughout the world and make sure our malls don't get blown up, apparently, or something, when yet they still always happen to do. And there's another reason, excuse of why we didn't catch it this time. And, you know, we need all this information again. The information is not to keep us safe. It's to keep the politicians safe, to keep the government safe, to keep the bureaucracies continuing is what they're doing. And to stay ahead of any potential problems that arise that weaken their power in the bureaucracy. So my argument is always back towards liberty and a limited government. And it's that's why I say, hey, if we really had a purely limited government, that information would actually be beneficial to our country for processing true, legitimate rule of law of who harms who and whatnot, because
which is
fine, the free market needs, if you have a true free market, you need to have stable law that punishes people when they harm other person's property or individuals.
Which in an ideal world.
You need a strong sense of law, and that would enforce the law that much better, in my opinion. But
that's fine. But the fact is, we don't live in that society right now.
Well, exactly.
So, in reference to what is happening right now, I think it's fair to say that we need to put a stop to it. I don't think it's something that just because if there was this scenario where we had this utopian, fantastic liberty state where everybody was free and the government was in check, that it's okay. Like, I'm not going to sit back and say, all right, I'm fine with it now. Like, I'm totally – I think something needs to be done about it very soon.
It's not going to be stopped, though. That's the whole thing. They've already they already put a commission together to, you know, go through it all to see if it's constitutional or not, and it gets shot down every time, and they just ignore it and keep going with it. It doesn't
mean that it's impossible to get rid of it. There's a – right now in Utah,
it's impossible. They already split all the information that goes through any fiber optics. It goes to a hub and it's mirrored. All that information has been stored for decades. Ever since they developed the fiber optic line.
Right now there's a bill in Utah that's been presented by a congressman that says they will not supply water to the data center that the NSA is building. That can stop their progress.
I would bet you as much money as you want to bet that bill will not pass.
Precisely.
Granted, but it's the right way to go about it. You're trying to slow things down, at least. There's no.
It's not.
I mean, I don't think it's going to pass.
But slowing things down isn't going to accomplish anything. That's my whole point. That's how we got to where we are today. Social Security, everything that starts with the income tax. It was like 0.1% of 1% that was going to have to pay that tax. And it just continues to grow and grow and grow from there. And that's why if you allow government just do this much data storage and not the multi, it's just going to grow right back into it. And then there's going to be some new terrorist attack, something that's going to happen, and be like, see, if we were only able to do that, we would have stopped it, which is bullshit, but that's the propaganda they would spew, and people would demand that, yeah, we need to start doing this. And that's why I say it's better to argue. To me personally, it just relinquished. I mean, obviously, we're all liberty people, and I've been arguing for, you know, if government was a very limited thing, and still it's people argue against it. You know, I couldn't even sway you guys to my opinion. And we're very liberty-minded individuals, all of us. So it's, to me, it's all the mindset of liberty in people's minds. And the more we can perpetrate that into knocking people upside the head with dialogue of liberty, that's the best way to move forward. It's a bumpy, you know, there's times we go up and times we go down, but I've been reading Milton Friedman lately, and, you know, his books are talking about how it's, you know, how close he was to, you know, there really was a groundswell of, you know, getting back to a free market and liberty. And then it just balloons even right after that, ballooned during Ronald Reagan's time. Government continued to grow. And it's, even though Reagan is the great conservative that everyone remembers, and it's hard to argue when Reagan grew government so much and enacted policies like Executive Order 12333 that allowed the intelligence agencies to collect information without a court order. So it's, even our great conservative leaders have grown government by leaps and bounds, and it's only because of those actions that may have limited government at the time, it's only damn near exponential growth ever since then, just because of, you know, making government more efficient, making it more reliable for government, and it only creates it to grow and grow. And it's without thinking of liberty, without thinking of limited government, without thinking of free markets, stuff like the NSA's data storage is always going to happen, whether we want it or not, and whether if it's enacted by, limited by Congress even, it's still going to grow. That's just my opinion.
That's an interesting thought, you know, specifically on how, you know, kind of possibilities around how information will be gathered and how it should be analyzed and what it should be used for. Because I thought a couple years ago about, you know, maybe they're, you know, given that there's, you know, such a good dragnet in place to collect that information, that the free market would take care of really securing individual privacy. You know, you'd see, you know, companies come out with really secure cell phones or, you know, various ways to provide privacy when online utilizing the internet. And then I, you know, was kind of going through that, and I thought, well, what's to prevent agencies who want to get that information from just placing their people in, you know, these startups or companies that are looking to, you know, protect privacy, that if they really want to include back doors into, you know, whatever, you know, something like LifeLock or whatever service that you're going to utilize, if they can get access anyway, you know, what real need is the market going to fill if they do that? Is it going to just be more psychological than actual? And, you know, maybe
maybe you're onto something, Kirk, when you say, you know, that it's the information's going, the ability to gather is going to be there, but government restraints need to be put into place. But I'm somewhat skeptical that that'll be all that effective, because you don't know the type of people that have access to that information. You know, obviously we've seen Edward Snowden; he got whatever he wanted, and he's a, you know, he appears to be a, you know, a truth seeker, and, you know, wants to change the system, that type of thing. I have no idea if he is or if he's not, but there certainly could be other individuals who have access to that disposal who, you know, want to use it for whatever gain it is. So,
why is the Snowden information damaging? If our government's actually legitimate doing good things throughout the world, mm-hmm. It shouldn't be a problem. Yeah. But because we're so devious throughout the whole world, that this classified information really is damaging, and damaging to our public too, because once we find out how corrupt we are throughout the world, then it weakens, you know, it gains the distrust and it weakens the power structure. So that information out there weakens the power structure. But if we can have access to it as well, but we will never get access to it. But the more and more people like Snowden that out the information, then maybe good can happen from it. That just goes back to my point. And if there really is just laws and limited government, free markets, I think it would settle itself out over time. But like, yeah, for how we sit now, I do not agree with the NSA data storage like they're doing. I am very against it. But if I can see that if we had a more of a truly free free economy, free market, and limited government, I can see the benefits in this information and whatnot, and how it goes back to Danny. You know, if you're not doing anything wrong, what do you got to hide? If there's not laws that can't prosecute you for all these little peedly stuff that's out there where you're not really harming anyone, then you really do have nothing to hide if you're not harming anyone. But there's so many laws out there and so much corruption and overstepping the bounds of every bureaucracy that's out there that it can be utilized to promote more and more tyranny over our lives. So
Danny, you're going to say something?
Me?
Oh, I thought
no, no, not really. I mean, it's, you know, I totally agree. You know, about, you know, these collection of data of information to fight terrorism and things like that. And I also kind of want to point out, it's like, you know, if someone really wants to damage our country, there's always ways that they can go about to, you know, get around from, you know, the NSA things they're doing. We're doing right now. I mean, criminals, you know, smart criminals that are really good, they're smart. They can always do anything to get away with it. So, you know, this process of collecting data and all this, trying to fight terrorism and find criminals, overall with the cost that we're spending to put this in place, you know, I just don't think it's effective. You know, that's just kind of what I think about this.
Fair point. I mean, the cost overall of what it takes to implement these systems is tremendous. And we don't what know benefit are we actually seeing?
Well, how about this option? What if Snowden's leaking wasn't by accident? And they want the American public to actually become accustomed to government spying on everything and to accept it.
There's the distinct possibility that's the case.
That's pretty much what I think. And so let's talk about, so why do they want the public to know about this right now? No, this is just forecasting the future. Why sure. Now? What's in store in the future? And to allow us to, cause now it's not a conspiracy theory. When I knew about everything Snowden was saying before, But every time I said anything, it's, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. You know, government doesn't do that. You got nothing to hide. So you have nothing to fear. Yada, yada, yada. But now it's public knowledge. And what would they gain by outing it right now? I think it's more of a controlled outing, that this information was going to come out eventually anyways. So why not control the outing of that information and feign outrage at Snowden and whatnot, when everything that's been released has kind of been common knowledge? For if people really wanted to find that information, they could. Do you guys have any thoughts on that? What the future entails for why they would out it like this? Or is it just, or do you think I'm looking at it wrong?
No, that's a fair point. You know, maybe, you know, it's kind of conspiracy in my opinion, but, you know, at the same time, it's a fair point. Maybe they're testing the waters, you know, to see the American citizens' response to this. And if they're like, oh, well, yeah, we understand, but, you know, we don't care, you know, it might just kind of, you know, let the, you know, the government to just kind of continue with getting more control with, you know, our everyday lives and things like that. So I think it's a fair point.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, a possibility could be, you know, conditioning the public to accept and understand, you know, that's being done, and to spark conversations as to why it should be done. So there, you know, isn't a lot of pushback against, you know, that type of strategy.
Yeah, because it's a weird topic, because I think there's a lot of Republicans that agree with it and disagree with it. And I think the same with the Democrats. I think there's a lot of people that, you know, think it should be stopped or it should be, you know, continued or whatnot. And so that's where it's kind of this weird, murky area that we're not accustomed to seeing, that the Republicans come out this way, Democrats come out that way. It's been kind of a mix in both ways. And so that's, it's, yeah, I don't know. It's very complicated, because it goes back on, you know, the security clearance agreements that people sign as well too. So, but to me, the whole thing stinks to high heaven.
What does the
Edward Snowden, the leaking of the information and whatnot, and
you don't think,
and how it's spun from there?
You don't think his interests are as genuine as they appear?
No. Because he signed the security agreements. He could go to prison the rest of his life. He could be killed, no problem. And yet he still isn't, he's only released so much information. And all that information to me is pretty weak. But I could be wrong. But to me, it's still very, very operationist still.
So you think you're just being skeptical. That's kind of, put it that way.
I'm trying to be realist. Because I know it's of how organized, you know, of how all these organizations work.
So you, what I'm getting is, you wouldn't be surprised if Edward Snowden was trained for this type. You can almost call it a mission, and it's an orchestrated process.
Yes, I think he's still very in the dark in a way. Like, once he goes on this mission, he's on his own. He can't be contacted to out the, you know, whatnot, but the specific mission, he still can be contacted, but it, the majority of the thing is, you know, you hold this mission and then you're going to do what you got to do to get it through, and we'll cover it where we can on our end, and you got to do what you can on your end. But now you led me down the conspiratorial road.
Yeah.
But I don't think I need to go there.
You don't need to. Well, you can. So to kind of close that up, how does it end for him?
How does it end or
yeah,
right now?
Yeah, how does it end? Do you think that something will come up where he'll move back to the United States, you know, be able to go on the speaking circuit, make 50 to 100 grand a speech and, you know, go off into the sunset? Or, you know, is he just continue for the, you know, rest of his life as, you know, a leaker? Or, you know, what do you think will happen there?
He's been nominated 8 times for a Nobel Prize.
I don't know. I think, you know, the guy's going to make money where he can. I mean, if he's going to go around and do speeches or whatnot, I don't see the pure benefit in that, but.
I guess you guys can discuss.
There's a point of power in having someone like that. If he really is on a mission, let's say, to do this, and people trust him and think he's, you know, out there to do good for, you know, this and that, he might end up making a lot more contacts and whatnot. You know, it's like someone implementing someone in the mob or something. You know, all of a sudden it's known that, all right, he's on this side. So people that contact him and whatnot, you can figure out who the enemies are towards, you know, this girl at the government, I guess, in a way.
What are you saying, Danny?
Oh, nothing. It's kind of getting, it's a little bit past 7 o'clock. Yeah. So, you know, this is something, a topic that we just potentially want to continue discussing.
Yep.
This Thursday. So,
well, I think we'll always discuss this for a while because stuff's going to keep on happening and something to talk about from time to time. So,
yeah. So with that, should we wrap it up?
Yeah.
If you guys want, I had one more discussion thing to talk about. It only lasts 5 minutes here, if max, but I can do it another time. So.
Sure. Let's 5 minutes, cut it. And.
Well, I just want to talk about it since. I go back to the State of the Union address, and it really bugs me to hear Obama constantly talk about himself. And these speeches are written. You know, they don't, it's not like Obama sits down and writes all these speeches himself. So if someone's going to write in a speech for Obama, when do you sit there and write it to sit there and talk about yourself the whole time? And so to me, there's just something about it, and I just can't put a finger on it, and it bothers me. And I was just wondering if you guys ever think about that and what you would, you know, what you think about him always being, saying, I did this, I'll do this, you know, me. It's Obama's meme is, you know, it's always been that way. And I just, and don't see why they continue it that way. In that sense, when his speeches are written and he rehearses them, and it's like, you know, if put yourself in Obama's shoes, you get a speech and you're like, nah, I need to talk about myself. Maybe, you know, I'm going to add this, I did this. All the speeches are teleprompters. So they're written down. Everything's put there for a reason, every single word. And I just can't understand why any speechwriter or what the psychological effects on our country for always having someone talk about me, I did this, I'll do this and whatnot so much. Is it just to make people with conservative leanings hate Obama so much? I mean, to force them back in the Republican camp to keep this 50-50 divide in the country of the two-party system? Or is it to keep all the heat on Obama for if you know, the shit hits the fan for all of these policies enacting, you know, maybe you can just pin it on Obama then and not the Democratic Party? Or, I don't know, do you guys think of anything other reasons behind it? Or am
maybe
I just crazy?
Maybe he just wants to, you know, establish why he's important, even though he's not important. He's just trying
to. Well, he is important. It's the president. It's, you know.
Yeah,
the
but
president,
you know,
should be a very important, highly respected office job.
Right, but let's face it. You know, we can think like dozens of people who could do a better job than he did. So maybe he's just trying to, you know, defend himself. He's probably gotten himself in the corner and just trying to get out.
Yeah, but it's not him writing these. That's my point, though. I mean, you watch a television show, a movie, or anything. Every single thing you see on screen has been placed there for a reason. These are sets. Every object, every thing in the background, every little knickknack in the room or in that scene of the movie or TV show or commercial, anything, is set there for a reason. And I relate the same thing to writing a speech. A speech is very refined. You want your message. You refine the words to promote this, to degrade this, to excite or, you know, to put blame on other people. And for someone to write in all these, I did this, I did that. To me, it's so grade schoolish. It's not a professional speechwriter at all. And so that's why it has to be put there for a reason, just like everything else in a movie is put there for a reason. And I can't figure out why that would be. And I just wanted to see if we could brainstorm through that and see if you guys had any other opinions on the matter.
Hey, my guess, my thought is, you know, certainly do research on this, but like you're saying, in movies, sets, et cetera, it's no different with political speeches or email or sent out, that there's polling that takes place, and, you know, the speechwriters work, you know, with pollsters to figure, you know, even when a demographic or set of individuals watches a speech, they look to see what terminology connects to their target audience the best. And that's incorporated into speeches. That would be my guess. And that it's done for that reason, for political reasons, for positive reception from various audiences, for the largest portion of whatever audience you're speaking to.
Well, and that's why they grade it too, on what kind of grade level the speeches are in. And most of Obama's speeches are written like at a third grade level, if I recall right.
Yeah, you want to appeal to the largest audience possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's very irritating to listen to.
But it's orchestrated, and it's, you know, I agree with you. It's done, you know, for a reason. And my thought is it's probably, you know, obviously done for political gain, but is it done for specifically one politician's gain, like Obama? Or, you know, would another individual, if they're in the same position, maybe even in a different party, if they understood that a specific way of addressing the audience works the best, would they utilize that strategy as well?
Yeah. Well, another, I just thought of this, that, you know, he is saying he's going to try and do a lot of executive orders that, you know, if Congress doesn't do it, I got a pen, I got a phone, I'll just go and do it. So maybe that has something to do with it, talking about himself the whole time, that, you know, try and upplay himself, that where, you know, I do everything right, everyone else sucks, so I'm just going to go out there and do it myself and make the right laws pass and or whatnot through executive action. Maybe that has something to do with it, but
there are individuals within the Democratic Party that are demanding that he does that because of the gridlock, and they want to see their progressive initiatives go through regardless of gridlock that's in place. And that gridlock, going back to what you've referenced several times, that gridlock is in place to really keep government functioning and small.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think it's time to wrap up. Matt, do you want to wrap up the show? What's the date today? It may be a good idea at the beginning of the show just to reference the date too.
The 9th.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that another time. Thank you, everybody, for joining. Once again, it's been Eric Taylor, Danny Ning, Kirk Pettis, and myself, Matt Winter. If you would like to check out our website, libertysw.org, we will be back next week. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.